Welcome to Don't Pass Me By with your host, Bob Wilson. That's me. Today, we're talking baseball. We're talking baseball with two great guests, Mr. Mike Rudy and Mr. Kevin Baskin. Mike Rudy hails from one of the royal baseball families, and Kevin Baskin has one of the most successful social media baseball pages, which I've been a member of for some time. I look at it every day. Vintage Baseball Photos on Facebook. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you for having me.
We're glad to have you here. Kevin, you're here?
Yes, I'm here. Glad to be here.
What do you say we start out, Kevin, by we'll ask Mike about his days of playing some ball there in college down in Florida. What do you think about that? We'll go for that.
Sure.
Okay. Mike, tell us about your days in Florida playing baseball.
Well, I went to a real small high school in Northeast Oregon, where Dad had moved us, back in 1977. And, we only had about 400 kids in the high school and played in a very small league. Ended up doing well enough to get a scholarship down to Florida State and played there in 1986-87. And ended up being good enough to actually be one of the we only had three out of the 15 freshmen that were there in the fall that made the spring team and was able to actually start in the opening day lineup, which was a complete surprise to me, and hit a home run in my first game. And then kind of, for the rest of the year, just kind of sat back and watched everybody else. But it was a great time. It was a fantastic year. They had just finished second in the College World Series the previous year in 1986. And so we were the number one preseason ranked team that year. And we had a really good lineup, topped by Deion Sanders, actually, was our center fielder. So, or right fielder that year.
So Deion Sanders on the team. No, just tell us a little bit about that. How did you guys get along?
He was great. Everything you see, it totally reminded me of Reggie Jackson. Everything you see in public is more of a persona. But off away from the cameras in the locker room, he is one of the greatest guys and teammates you'll ever want to have. And so I had a great year. We spent actually roomed together a few times on the road. But he was a fantastic guy.
That sounds like it was exciting. And so much of what you've gone through in baseball has been exciting. But Kevin, let's go over to you for a second here. Tell us about this page, Vintage Baseball Photos. How'd you get it started and how did it get up to 171,000 plus members?
Well, it got up to that amount by 5 years of very hard work. That's basically the long and short of that. We started out 5 years ago as just a little group of people that wanted to talk about old baseball and share old photos and that would stimulate conversation about the game. Book Off started growing. We weren't the biggest Facebook group on that subject, not right at the start, but within probably 6 months to a year, we had caught up with other groups that were similar, and then we passed them and just kept going and going. It's now, like I say, we're probably in the next couple of days, we're going to hit 172,000 members, but it just gets bigger and just goes as time goes on.
So that's an amazing success story. It's hard sometimes to get, on my Oakland A's page, you had to give me a boost there. And you got me up from 13 members to 1,100 just by your prestige glowing on me. So thank you for that. So now we got a little page going there, thanks to you. But Kevin, you know baseball, and we've talked about the Oakland A's, and you know quite a bit. What would you like to ask our guest, Mike Rudy, about his Oakland A's, about his playing days, about his pop? We turn over to you now, and we have our little segment here. Kevin, ask the questions.
Sure. Well, Mike, a couple things that I thought about wanting to talk with you about while I had the opportunity. First off, I've talked about with my group, and I've mentioned before that the impact that my father had on me, not because he was a famous player, but just that relationship between fathers and sons in baseball is a natural thing. I can only imagine what it's like to have a father that is nationally known by everyone who follows baseball. What was it like growing up being the son of a big league star?
You know, it was like every kid dreams of. I really, even looking in the moment there, we're always so fortunate to be in that situation. And, you know, having a guy like my dad be the one there for us was amazing. He was, you know, very great dad, man. I tell you what, he always put his family first. He would always call us from the road every day. But it was just one of those things. When you're growing up in it, you don't really realize that it's any different from anybody else's life. And at the same time, you know that it's a special thing. Yeah, and so he did a great job raising the kids. He's a very humble man, and he raised us kids to be like that, and to, you know, give thanks for our blessings and things like that. So he always included my brother and I. Scott's 2 years younger than I am. He would take us to the ballpark when we could, when they were at home and we were out of school. And so we got to spend a lot of time together with him and with the other A's, then on when he went to the Angels. So it was fantastic growing up.
Well, that's great. Obviously, you know, like I say, having a father who was a big leaguer, I'm sure you had a bias. He was probably your favorite player, or somebody following how he was doing his career. But those A's teams back in the 70s, they were just loaded with talent. Who were the other players that were your personal favorite that you liked, or because you liked how they were around them personally, or their playing ability, or what have you? But who were the other A's besides your dad that you really had a connection to?
I think, gosh, and we were just down for the Hall of Fame induction ceremony and got to be with a couple of them. Reggie Jackson is one that has been, you know, long life, you know, almost lifelong friend, very close and still close with the family. And you know, like I said, as much as everybody sees in public, off the field and stuff, Reggie is got a great heart, and one of my favorites. And then the other two that we were very close as families with were Sal Bando and Gene Tennis, and their kids were all our kids' age. And so those three guys, really with the A's, were my favorite players.
Well, that's great. One other thing I wanted to ask you about during that time, I know, much to Bob's chagrin, he's been a lifelong A's fan and probably really gravitated to the A's while they were winning those World Series titles back in the 70s. When free agency came about, it really broke up the A's. And really, before teams were losing players to free agency, one thing that I always think about in terms of your father is when Charlie Finley, the owner of the A's, tried to sell your father and Raleigh Fingers to the Red Sox and Vida Blue to the Yankees, and ended up Bowie Kuhn, the commissioner, boarded the deals and, you know, forced them back to their team, you know, to finish out the year. What was it like for your family and for your dad and for you, the uncertainty of where's dad playing and what's going on here?
It was a very surreal moment, and I was there with dad at the park, those days, him cleaning out his locker and Raleigh cleaning out their locker and moving, cause they were playing at home, and moving over to the Red Sox clubhouse, and Don Zimmer was the manager, I believe, at that time. And, you know, the best part about it was Steve Vucinic was the guy, and you know, he basically took care of my brother and I while this was going on. But I'll never, because I, you know, we were going between locker rooms, and Vida was on the payphone in the hallway between the two. I'll never forget them looking at each other, dad and him and Raleigh, and just, you know, kind of shake. And, you know, as much as they didn't want to leave their teammates that they'd been with for so long, I think that they were actually kind of excited to go to Boston because they knew that Boston was a contender. They had a great ownership group, a great coaching staff, and a great core group of players. It was just, it was surreal. And I sometimes think about what would have happened that deal. So I guess we'll never find out, but it would have been interesting.
Well, I'm sure it turned out after, Thad finished out that with the A's that he ended up going into free agency. The A's got nothing for the players, which really was, I feel like, that was unfair to Oakland. If they were going to lose them, they weren't able to get anything in trade or monetary compensation coming back. I believe your dad ended up signing with the Angels and played a few years with them. What were those years like? Were there players that you liked, and what was his experience like during those Angels years?
It was really, for me and for my family, it was a great time. Gene Autry was an incredible owner, and Dad and Gene Autry really had a great relationship back then. It was a fantastic team. You looked at that team and you could see right away they were going to be contenders, except for they had a couple of unfortunate. My dad took a pitch. He was out off to one of his starts in 77, took a pitch from Nelly Bryles off of his wrist, broke his wrist. And then Bobby Gritch, who they also signed as a free agent, hurt his back moving a refrigerator. And so they didn't have as good of a year. But on that team, you had Nolan Ryan and you had Frank Tanana, both fantastic pitchers. And they both had really pretty good years in 77. So, if that club would have stayed healthy, I would have had a really good run that year. But those teams with the Angels, you really look at the guys that they obtained, including Rod Carew, some great players on that team.
Sure, and I know you made mention about Frank Tanana, and it sparked a memory that, he had to pretty much, he came up as a hard-throwing left and developed arm troubles and basically reinvented himself later in his career. And the quote, and I don't know who it's attributed to, but the thing I always think of in terms of Frank Tanana was that, they said he threw in the 90s in the 1970s, but by the 90s he was in the 70s. But he still hung around for a long career.
Yeah, he did. He really learned how to pitch. He's a great guy. He was one of the he was a perfect fit, especially with the Angels. He was very down to earth and he's a funny guy, but. He did. He really became a great thinking pitcher when he didn't have what was his strength, which was his speed. So it was great to see him do that later in his career.
Sure, those like I say, those Angels, they had some great teams, some great talent during that time. And I know your dad, if I recall correctly, your dad at the latter part of his career after. The deal with the Red Sox fell through in 76. He ended up actually playing for Red Sox later on, didn't he?
Yeah, he played in the strike year in 1981. He actually played with the Red Sox. He was hurt for most of that year. I think he had an Achilles issue. And he was part of a trade. I think Carney Lansford was in that same trade or I can't remember, but that's what brought Fred Lynn over to the Angels at that time. And so it was an interesting year because they knew they were going to strike. I was one of the very the only years growing up that I was stayed in Oregon during the spring, and then after the strike was moved back to Boston area and finished out the year there. But man, that was a great experience also. And Carl Yastrzemski was still playing. They had some great players back there, and it was fantastic for the family to get that experience also.
But all these years while he was playing, you spent most of your growing up time in Oregon. That's correct.
Yeah, we moved up to Northeast Oregon in I think the winter of 77, and we would start school in the fall up here, and go all the way until spring training started, and then we'd move back to California to finish out the spring. And so, yeah, I really didn't go to the same school except for that 1 year in 81. I didn't go to the same school all year round until I was a freshman in high school, which was Dad's last, you know, he retired in 82, and that was my freshman year in high school. It started out that fall. And so I spent all 4 years of high school here, and I am the only one of four of the kids that moved back, and I've actually been living here for the past 16, 17 years now.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong. I seems like I remember reading a story about at one time that was it like a hunting or a fishing trip or something in Oregon, and they just fell in love with the place and ended up moving there?
Out and out south where we and Dad and they used to have a bunch of different guys. I know Billy Williams came up 1 year with them, but after the season was over, they'd come up and hunt pheasants with Harmon for a few weeks. And on one of those trips up, I believe it's in 75, that Dad met what eventually became his business partner and really good friend, Mike Nelson, who lived in Baker, and Mike brought him up to Baker in 1976, and Dad just fell in love with it. And then, you know, the next year after free agency, he took some of his bonus and bought some property up here and moved us up here that next winter.
Wow, that's really cool. So it ended up, it's become your home for life now, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. I wouldn't want to live any other place, and it was a place I wanted to raise my kids at. And you know, it's of all the places I've grown up, this really was, it was the one constant I think we had in our lives as kids. And we all were very fortunate and felt fortunate to grow up here. So.
Can I sneak in? And I wanted to ask a follow-up question to the sales that Finley did with some of the guys to other team, you know, like your dad going to Boston and really going to Boston.
Mm-hmm.
If they had gotten the money for those players, is, you know, his defense was he had raised a farm system that was, you know, incredible. Like all these guys who came up, your dad, Rick Monday, Sal Bando, Gene Tennis, Bert Campanaris, Catfish Hunter, you know, John Odom, they found all these guys. If they had allowed him to take the money for those players, and his argument was, I could build up our farm system, he certainly had the apparatus to find talent. Do you think he was just going for the money and going to sell? Or do you think he would have really brought the A's back to respectability?
You know, I that's a very hard I don't think the way the game changed with free agency, even if he would have got the money, I don't think the money would have been enough to make much of an impact. Now, he still had a great farm system. And that was something the A's, you know, through the years, they did. They had one of the best farm systems in all of baseball during that time, even into the late 70s. And so it would have been interesting to see what he would have done with the money, or if it would have been enough to really make an impact, especially for the late 70s and then into the early 80s, because, you know, he even then, he really wasn't spending that much money on free, you know, attracting free agents to come play for him. And so I just don't know. That's a good question, Bob.
Well, it was kind of like the Yankees destroyed baseball by breaking the bank in a sense. Like when I say destroyed, I mean they took a lot of the fun out of it for me. And George Steinbrenner, you know, built some great teams. But the special thing about the A's, you wanted to see the players make a nice salary and such. But on the other side of the coin, you know, some of these guys now, like Alex Rodriguez, were making like a quarter of $1 billion, I think.
Yeah.
And yes, what do you think of the disparity in the money the players were making then and to what it's become? To me, like, you know, I wish everybody well, but that's an awful lot of money to be playing, you know, paying a guy to play sports, and it comes out in the tickets and the parking, the fans get gouged.
Yeah, I as much as I'm a player guy, so I don't disparage any of these guys from getting as much as they can. And I'm a free market guy. So if there's somebody out there willing to pay them, then I'm all for it. Now, the backside of that is just what you're saying, Bob, is that pricing out everybody? And you can really see it in Oakland, where the attendance has never been that great. But, you know, it's too bad that an average family can't go to the ballpark without, you know, breaking the bank. And I do wish it was different from that standpoint. But, you know, with the media rights and everything else anymore, I don't know how much that really drives the bottom line anymore with the money, with the TV contracts and stuff. So, it's a hard situation, I think, in a lot of cases, especially for these small market teams, for sure.
Absolutely. Now, when I watched the teams in 72, they beat the A's beat the Reds for the championship. 73, the A's beat the Mets for the championship. 74, A's beat the Dodgers for the championship. Kevin was right on target. You know, I was about 7 when they beat the Reds. And watching that on TV was like the most exciting thing I ever saw. Like when Gene Tennis was hitting, you know, 4 home runs in the series, I went nuts. You know, it was for a kid watching this, it was, and it's such a colorful team. And your dad became, you know, my favorite player. But it was such an incredible team with like the guys you mentioned, like Reggie, you know, Gene Tennis, Sal Bando, Mike Epstein. It was just one after the other, and they were very colorful, and they were so much fun to watch. But when I look at your dad's statistics, he was an incredible player. He led the league in hits in 72. I looked up before the show, 181 hits, 3 gold gloves. Made that fantastic catch in the World Series against Dennis Menke that everybody talks about all the time still. And he came in second in MVP votes, which when I looked it up, I didn't realize it was twice. 72, he came in second at Richie Allen, or Dick Allen, they call him. And in 74, he came in second to Jeff Burrows. So he was an all-star several times. But at the same time, he was like a gutsy player who was always in the game. His head was in the game. His stats, he knocked in 99. We wished he'd gotten that one extra RBI for 100. What I'm trying to say is he was so talented and an all-star, everybody wanted him on their team. But at the same time, he was a gritty player and a gamer. He just fit in so well with that ace team. They played, you know, together. Can you just, from what I've just been rambling on about, take over and talk about that a little?
Yeah, you know, I think Dad'll be the first one to admit that he, you know, he didn't have the physical talent like a Reggie Jackson. And so he really had to work. And especially within the A's organization, you know, talks a lot about when he was coming up, he was a shortstop in high school. And they wanted him to play outfield, and he had never played outfield in his life. And so, you know, one of the things he talks about is Joe DiMaggio working with him constantly when in 69 and 68 and hitting balls to the wall and things like that. But that was just Dad. I mean, he knew he had to work harder than everybody else to make himself the best player he can or he could. And so, you know, that's something I think that rubbed off. That's why a lot of teams liked having him there as either a player or a coach, is because he really worked with the younger guys and he wanted to set an example for them. And then on that team in particular in the early 70s, man, he was just surrounded by very, very talented players. And so he just wanted to be part of the team. That was his main thing. He didn't care about stats. He didn't, you know, care less about how many home runs he hit. He just wanted to do whatever he could to contribute to that team winning. And so I think from that standpoint, you know, he fit right in with those teams, and it allowed him to be a part of a great, you know, dynasty through the early 70s there.
And when they won in 72, 73, and 74, as you know, the son of one of the star players, how did it feel watching those games and going to those World Series? What memories do you have of that?
Yeah, you know, I was pretty young. In fact, I was born in Oakland in October of 1968, which was their first year in Oakland. And so I think I just turned 4 in the 72 series. And so my earliest memories, they never let us kids go to any of those series games. And so my grandparents lived in Modesto, and we'd watch the games with them. And I remember watching those games on TV vividly. I remember that's one of my earliest memories. But man, you know, through the years and through really watching the replays and the highlights and all that stuff, it was great. And you know, from us kids, like I said, we didn't know it was any different, the experience that they were going through during those times. But you know, I remember, especially being a young kid, we really couldn't go out to eat without people coming up and wanting autographs and things like that. Or, you know, it was just, one of those things, that went along with their success. So, but you know, it was great. And looking back on it now, you really, really appreciate those, what they did and those times.
No, absolutely. And there's such great memories. I go back on YouTube and I rewatch those games, you know, over and over. I'll pick a series and everything they got, like on, you know, against the Reds, against the Mets, Dodgers, I'll put those on, and what they have of the playoff series. Those were so much fun. But did your dad ever speak on coming in second for the MVP twice? That's pretty noteworthy. I mean, and two great players as far as ahead of them.
Yeah, I think he, you know, just talking to about it, he never, you know, he's a guy that would never, ever say that he deserves an MVP or anything else like that for personal accolades. And so, you know, talking to him, he basically said, yeah, both those guys deserved it that year. So, and, you know, he knew both of them pretty well. And he's always said that he never, you know, never, ever thought he would even be second in MVP voting at any time in his career. So, which is just him. I mean, that's just my dad.
Well, my arm is tiring and we have Kevin Baskin in the bullpen. I think the manager's looking at me because my arm's getting a little weak. But before we call on Kevin Baskin to finish the inning, can you tell us how your dad got involved in ham radio? And did you also enjoy ham radio or just your dad?
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting story. He met a guy. He'd always been interested in CB radio and things like that. And I think even younger than that, as a kid, through Boy Scouts or whatever, he'd kind of gotten interested in it, as a hobby. But when he was playing with the A's, he met a friend that was a pretty hardcore ham radio guy. And so he built this first station when we lived in Danville. And then even a bigger station when we went down and he was playing with the Angels, and then even a bigger one up in Oregon. But he used to take it on the road with him. He packed a big suitcase with a portable ham radio, and he had a wire antenna and a fishing pole. And he always used to ask for the top floor, a top floor room. He used to cast the antenna across the roofs over the street to be able to work it. And I think, you know, he it's just something he really, really loved doing. And he says it kept him out of trouble when he was on the road, for sure. So, but it was a great hobby for him in the off season. He did all kinds of, contesting where they have these, ham radio contests to contact different countries and how many people you can work in those different countries. And so it kind of fueled his competitive spirit in the off season, for sure. And when we're in Oregon, you really can't go outside in the winter too much because it's cold and snowy. So it just really fit in with his lifestyle. And then he got me into it. You know, I'd always been interested, but I didn't get licensed until I moved back to Baker, right around 2004, 2005, when they were still living here. And so, you know, I dabble, but nothing, like what Dad has done. So, and then, can I say something?
What do they talk about on there when they get on ham radio? I didn't mean to interrupt, but what are they?
Oh, no, you're good.
What do they, when they call somebody up, what do they talk about?
So if, it's a little bit different. So if it's just, they have things called nets where there'll be a group of guys, that every night they'll get on the same station at the same time and they'll just talk. They'll talk about, you know, how the weather is or how everybody's doing, you know, with their health and things like that. So he's had friendships for, you know, 40 years with guys that they talk almost nightly. And then if it's a contest, they're just getting their call sign and their location usually, as part of the contest. But yeah, it's I don't know. It's like a group, a big group chat just over the radio for the most part.
No, my arm is tiring, and the manager is tapping on his right wrist, which means it's time to bring back Kevin Baskin into it.
Can I say one more thing about Kevin's page? I really, both your guys' pages that I'm a part of are fantastic. And Kevin, your page is amazing. I really have enjoyed it since I've been a member over the last few years. And it's one of the best pages that I've seen for especially that time period. It's great.
Well, I certainly appreciate that. One thing that I've really been flattered by during the development and the growth of Vintage Baseball Photos is that we have a lot of former players that are members of the group, and we also have a lot of family members such as yourself that are the children or the grandchildren of former players, and some are Hall of Famers, and you know, it always is something that always warms my heart when a picture will be posted of a former, you know, big name player, and one of their offspring will comment. It's like, I've never seen this picture of Dad before. Thanks so much for posting it. And those are the things that I think, well, hey, we're on the right track here when we see something like that.
I concur. And what does Mike have to say? I concur. I just want to say, I think Kevin's page is fantastic. I'm on there every day. And thanks to him, I got the Ace page, fans of the Swinging Ace, because he gave me a boost, so we got some members. But on that, back to you, Mike.
Yeah, I agree with Kevin. I think it's great to see some of the players that you have on there and then some of the kids on their comments. But there is a lot of content. You're absolutely right. I've never seen a lot of those pictures that get posted, and not even of Dad or the A's, but you know, just some of the guys that I've known growing up. It's fantastic to have that kind of content out there. And I show my kids all the time. And I'll tell them a backstory about the players. And so it is a fantastic page. And Bob, so is yours. I mean, you know, from an A standpoint, man, the content that goes on there and the stories that, you know, I remember just from some of the pictures that go on there, and how many I've never seen before. It's a great, both of the pages are outstanding.
We've been really lucky in one in that Kevin boosted us. I thanked him three times, but because I had like 13 members till he did that. And we broke 1,000, which is workable. But the people on the page have been so well behaved and kind and fun. And then when you came on and Rolly Fingerson came on, that was such a kick. So I owe both of you guys a thanks, but back to Kevin.
Well, in talking about our group, one thing that came to mind that you were just sort of what you were just referencing, a few years ago, we had a member, well, he's still a member of the group, but he had an elderly father who had played in the late 40s, early 50s. And while his father was in a nursing facility, I believe, was not actively on Facebook, he would go over there and visit him, and he would bring up and show him pictures from our page, and his dad would, you know, have memories and talk about, oh yeah, that was this stadium that I was playing in, and I went 2 for 4 there one day, and you know, and to hear his dad was in was in his late 90s and has since passed away, but to hear those type of stories. I know Rocky Colavito, who to me is a big name, not a Hall of Famer, but a huge name that I've knew my whole life growing up, and some of his offspring, his grandchildren and so forth, have been on the page, and they've said that they've shown Grandpa the pictures, and you know, those are the type of things that like I say, that I always love to hear when we're getting good feedback from people that were actually insiders that played the game and lived that lifestyle, either playing themselves or grew up in the household where Dad was a player. To get that kind of feedback from you is very it pleases me very much. But moving on, Mike, I did want to ask you a couple of things about your Florida State. I know that you probably don't know, but I am a huge college baseball fan. I've lived my entire life in Arkansas. We don't have to fish. Arkansas Razorbacks fan, and Arkansas Razorbacks have a very strong college baseball program, as does Florida State. And we've hooked up, we're in different conferences, the ACC and the SEC, but we've hooked up several times in the past in the NCAA tournament or even in the College World Series. And I know for years, and I think he was there at the time that you played and was there until just recent years, that Mike Martin was just a legendary coach at Florida State. I was wondering if you had any stories you could share about your experiences playing for such a legendary college coach.
Yeah. I mean, he was an amazing coach and an amazing man. And I tell you, he just makes you feel like part of the family. And that family, you know, especially at that time, all the way up till recently, I mean, that family was Florida State baseball. And I, you know, his son, Mike Martin Jr., who succeeded him coaching, was probably 12 years old at the time that I was playing there. But you know, those are the things. He just made everybody feel like a family. All the players, the way that everybody interacted, he was just one of those special coaches that could bring a group of people together and really get the best out of all of them. He was just successful for so long, and his style of baseball is, he never got over the top and won the national championship. But boy, I tell you what, he put some great teams on the field year after year. So it was special, and I felt very fortunate to be able to play for him. And he was always just such a gentleman and a great guy.
Well, I think, after he retired, his son took over for a period of time, and now they've made another coaching change down there. I follow college baseball closely, and this year Notre Dame made a fantastic run and beat the unbeatable Tennessee team. It seemed that Tennessee was just going to waltz through to the Omaha and win the College World Series, and Notre Dame went over there and beat them and went in their place, the College World Series. Their coach was Link Jarrett, who I know was probably not a little bit younger than you, but played also at Florida State. And I know he's going to be taking over the program down there at Florida State. Now, do you have any memories of him, or what are your thoughts about this new coaching regime coming in to coach the Seminoles?
You know, I don't remember. He was a little bit younger than I was, but he, like I said, he came up through that system. Boy, what a great run last year. And I'm with you, Kevin. I'm a huge college baseball fan, and I almost prefer watching the college game more than professional baseball anymore. And especially when you get around regionals up to the College World Series, that's my favorite time of the year, to watch. But, you know, I really think that Florida State did a great job of, getting the next coach for that team, and they I think they really had to have a guy that played there to come in and fill those shoes, because my gosh, the Martins had been there for so long, it just wasn't, you just couldn't fill it with anybody. And so I think they did a great job of getting the best coach for that program possible. And I think they're going to have a great, next few years. I think the recruiting is going to be fantastic. And the coaches that he's surrounded himself with going into this next year are top-notch. He brought a lot over from Notre Dame with him. So I'm excited. I'm excited for the program.
Well, you know, history has shown that a lot of times when you have this ultra-long-time successful coach at a program, and then they're replaced maybe by their offspring, or maybe by their handpicked successor, a longtime assistant or whatever, it's always sort of mixed results. I think of Joey Meyer replacing Ray Meyer at DePaul, and it just didn't work as well as a lot of times you feel like it's going to be a smooth transition. The old saying is, you don't want to be the man that replaces the man, the legend. And a lot of times you have to have that. You sort of have to have a coach as a segue to the next guy that ends up you know, resuming the glory days of a program. And so I'm sure that it was incredibly difficult for Mike Martin Jr. to step into his brother's shoes and with these built-in expectations that, you know, that it's just hard to appease everybody, especially in a sport. I know college baseball is not huge all over the country, but in the South, as you know, and you follow it, it is a big deal. And at Florida State, I've always had a fascination about Florida State baseball, even though Arkansas doesn't play them that regularly, other than, like, say, in tournament regional. As I recall, there is some, to me, kind of a strange tradition that at some point during Florida State games, don't they sing "O Canada"?
They do. And I confess they didn't do that back when I was there. That started later, but the Animals of Section B have been around there for longer than even when I was there, and they came up with that tradition. But I am not well versed on how that originated, but I do believe it originated with one of the players from Canada that was playing down there. So, but it's kind of fun to watch, I'll tell you that.
Well, yeah, that's one thing that is good about college baseball, because there are some goofy traditions. You know, there are at Razorback games, there are sections that do different things at different times. And when they've had certain players in the past, we had from Hawaii one year, and they fans would wear the Hawaiian Lays, you know, where he would come up to bat. And we had a player a few years ago, his last name was Spoon, and people all of a sudden started showing up with these gigantic wooden spoons, you know, and waving around when he came up to bat. So, you know, that's something that college baseball, I think, kind of gets, that they don't necessarily get on the professional level sometimes. They do in the minors, but you have to try a little harder to promote it, and you can have fun. When these are younger guys, and they can have fun with it. It's not this huge big business yet. You know, it's still, they're playing for that joy from just getting to play the game.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And college baseball in the South is special. And the rivalries there, I mean, and the amount of people they draw to those games, it's amazing. And it's something you don't see everywhere in the United States, but boy, down South, it's fantastic, and great traditions, like you said.
Well, I know we both are on the same page. We watch a lot of college baseball, and of course, this is the time of year that there's a void after the College World Series in Omaha. You know, that's when I really start paying more attention each year to the remainder of the pennant races and going through the playoffs and the World Series. Who are the teams that you follow now as a current fan of Major League Baseball?
You know, I follow the A's as hard as it is. And you know, one of the things, my dad, they live in Florida in the winter, but they usually summer up here with us. And so, you know, every night we'd go on my back porch. I've got an outdoor TV out there, and we'd watch the A's with a couple glasses of scotch or something. And which is great. I mean, that's the best part of it. Doesn't matter who's playing, but outside of the A's, I just like watching good baseball, and I don't really have favorite teams, but you know, I do like watching good baseball. And so whether it's the Braves or watching the Dodgers, and you know, a lot of times the Dodgers Padres will be a great series to watch, and things like that. And then I actually enjoy watching the Angels. Just watch Ohtani and Mike Trout play a little bit, even though they're not that great last year's either. But I just, you know, look, if you give me two good teams playing, I'm happy. Otherwise, I'm suffering with the rest of the Oakland A's fans and trying to get through this rebuilding period. So,
I personally follow teams that have former Razorbacks, because as I said, I'm a big Arkansas Razorbacks fan, and so Andrew Benintendi was traded earlier, and he's in this season, and in the middle of a pennant race with the Yankees, who have been struggling a little bit of late. He did hit a go-ahead home run today, which that was that was good for us Razorback fans to see. But players like that, are there any Florida State players that are now doing very well in the major leagues that you kind of keep track of?
You know, and I haven't the last few years. I know Cal Raleigh is catching up in Seattle. You know, I followed Buster Posey for years when he was playing for the Giants. I got to meet him a few times down there. And you know, I'm sure there's a ton of guys that have gone to Florida State recently, and I just haven't followed them after they've left the team very well. But, yeah, it's always great to kind of see guys that have played for Florida State. And then, you know, after I left Florida State, I went to a small college in Idaho called Lewis Clark State. And so Seth Brown is playing for the A's now, and that's where he went. And there's been guys through the years that I've kind of followed that way too. But yeah, I think that is kind of special, is watching those guys progress through the minor leagues and up in the big leagues and following them that way too. Totally agree.
Well, yeah, just again, so you guys know, we have about 10 minutes left to talk, so make your questions the one you really want to ask to fill in those 10 minutes. Now, while we got Mike here on the show, please continue.
Sure. Mike, one thing else I was wanting to ask you is that I know, like I say, obviously you're a big fan of the game, and this year it's just kind of wide open at this point. There's several teams that look pretty solid, but when we have an expanded playoff now with an extra wild card, you know, it's could be really anybody's game if you just make the playoffs. But if you were having to make a pick today, who you think out of this year's teams are looks most solid for the World Series, or who do you think might win it all this year?
Man, that is a really, really good question. It's so hard because, you know, early I would have said the Yankees look the best of everybody, and now they've kind of folded back. But boy, you know, the Dodgers are always somebody that I keep my eye on. They've got a great lineup. The Braves also they're fun to watch. I'm not a huge fan of Houston for obvious reasons, but they, you know, continue to have consistent teams. And then, you know, the one that really this year I'm kind of excited about is the Mets, just because they've put together that team and they look good, and it'd be kind of fun to see how far they can go with it too. So, but you know, really in the end, the Dodgers look real good. And you know, in the American League, the Yankees are still, I'm sure they'll turn around here going to the rest of the year too, hopefully. So it'll be fun to see.
I'm based on absolutely nothing scientific and nothing other than just my own goofy gut feeling, but I have a feeling that one of these teams that makes a late run and gets in as maybe the second or third wild card goes on a magical run and may get to the championship series, or the World Series, may not win at all. But I've got a feeling that this third wild card coming into play this year, that somebody is going to take advantage of that. And then at the end of the year, the story will be, under previous rules, they wouldn't have even made the playoffs. But
right.
I just have the feeling that somebody is going to get in there, sneak in, that's kind of on the periphery of the wild card hunt right now, and have a big September and go on a run. Talking about college baseball again, you know, this year, of course, I follow it closely, and Ole Miss ended up winning the whole thing, which is a big SEC rival for the Arkansas Razorbacks, and we had beat them, you know, several times during the regular season, and we get to Omaha and they beat us twice. They were one of the very last at-large teams to make it into the tournament. And so it just goes to show you their record in the SEC this year. They won 14 and lost 16 games. They weren't even a 500 team, and it was debatable if they should even get into the NCAA tournament, and they won the College World Series. So they're evidence that if you get in, you've got a shot, you know, and it was an amazing story that what they were able to accomplish. And, and looked so, they looked like the best team in Omaha the entire tournament up there. And again, 3 weeks before that, they were sweating it out if they were even going to get an invite. And I guess that's part of my basis of what I'm thinking, just this gut feeling that somebody is going to make a run and slip into the playoffs and then really make some noise this year.
Yeah, I think, you know, expanding the playoffs like that, it's designed to do just that. Just like you said with Ole Miss, I mean, the NCAA tournament is fantastic in that. And you get a lot of unexpected results because there are so many teams that they can get in and have a magical run there at the end. And so I agree with you. There's several teams in there that could come out of the wild card and surprise everybody. I agree.
Now, I just have to jump in because we have a few minutes left in the show. And I just want to ask everybody a couple of questions. Mike, first you. Did your dad ever think of doing an autobiography, like, you know, project to tell about his time with the A's? Because I haven't found one of those yet when I look in the book.
Yeah, that's a great question. And he'd be the first to say. So that's just his personality. But yeah, it'd be great, man. I would love to sit there and listen to the stories that he does. I prompt him all the time when he's home, and we're just sitting there talking about stories like that. And a lot of it comes from showing him pictures from both your guys' pages. And we were talking about that earlier.
Oh, my goodness. He's seen our pages? He's seen the A's page?
Oh, yeah. Sure. All the time. I show him pictures from there all the time.
That is so cool. You made my day.
Yeah, no, he really he loves it, and so, but yeah, to for him, I think that would be a great idea. I don't think I could ever get him to do it.
Yeah, tell him it's not self-aggrandizing; it's for the fans. I'd love to read the stories you hear all the time. You know what I mean? Like it wouldn't just be for him; it would be for us.
That's what I've thought about doing is start record some of these conversations while we're just sitting there watching baseball and, you know, tipping a couple scotches back and just let them go, telling stories about that because they're fantastic. And you're right. Yeah. I think fans would love that, but I don't know if I could ever formally get them to do that. So
now, as we're winding down the show, do you have anything you'd like to tell us about anything? I know now we asked for a book. Maybe you'll come back and tell us the book's coming out so you can plug that. Is there anything you'd like to turn the attention of our listeners to?
No, I think thank you for having me on. This is a great podcast. And like I said, both your guys' pages, I hope everybody goes out and looks at both of your pages. Not just those. I'm sure you have other pages on there, but those are the two that I know of. And I think the next couple of years for Dad and the rest of those 70s A's, they have the reunions coming up. They just had their 72 reunion and their 73 and 74 coming up the next 2 years. And especially with everything that's going on with talk of moving or building the new ballpark, I think these next couple of years are going to be the last time we're going to see the majority of this group get together. And so I'd encourage everybody to go out and when they're together like that, to go and take a look and listen to them and things like that. So,
and before we plug Kevin's page again, it's my favorite page on Facebook. I think it's the best baseball page, vintage baseball photos. I just have to ask, we should have asked you earlier, but I was so excited at talking to you. It skipped my mind, but tell us about the A's Hall of Fame.
Oh man, that was, that was fantastic. The A's did such a great job. And really took care of all the families. And so, you know, it was a pretty special year. Dad went in with Sal, Captain Sal and Ray Fossey, and then Steve Vicinich were that, you know, all those guys had been there since the beginning of that run. And so it was very special. And just to see, you know, we had six Rudy grandkids, the Bando kids, I think there was five or six grandkids from there and the Fosseys had four. And just seeing all the grandkids together, and they were all wearing jerseys of their dads and grandpas, and it was it was really, really special just to see the whole thing and the way the A's took care of us and have, you know, some of the previous Hall of Famers, Ricky and Reggie, were there, and the Bida was there. And so it was just, it was a magical weekend and a really huge honor. Dad, you know, Dad, it's not Dad's scene, man. He could care less about personal accolades, but I think this one was really special to him. And so, and then it was special for the families. And I think that that was a big deal for him. So it's a great, great weekend.
Well, congratulations. And Kevin, as we close out, tell us, where can the fans go to find, they go to Facebook. How do they find your esteemed page?
Probably the easiest way would just in the search bar, just type in vintage baseball photos. Our cover page, I change it just about daily to have something fresh and represent interest of fans of all the teams across America. So you won't necessarily see the same page on the that will pop up. But if you see vintage baseball photos, it will say something like, right now, it may say 171.9K members. So, yeah, we're right at 172,000. When you see that, you'll know that you found the right place, and we'd love to have people join that have an interest in the game.
Well, they love the page if they check it out. So this is Don't Pass Me By with your host, Bob Wilson. That's me, and I have to thank Mike Rudy for coming on and making my day. The Rudy family going down there for the Hall of Fame inductions for the A's players. That's fantastic. It was so much fun talking to him. Kevin Baskin with the best baseball page and social media, vintage baseball photos. So we want to thank everybody for listening. Maybe these guys will come back and talk with us again. I certainly hope so. And I thank them both for making my day. So this is the Shake and Wake Radio Network, and we want to thank you for being here, and we say good night.